If you enjoy Champions for Children, be sure to check out the new podcast from Nemours Children's Health, Well Beyond Medicine. Subscribe today wherever you get your podcasts or at nemourswellbeyond.org to continue hearing the stories of anything and everything related to the 80% of child health impacts that occur outside the doctor's office. And now, the episode of Champions for Children you requested. Enjoy!
I'm an American now, but I do not forget where I come from. I also count myself lucky to have been in this country and to have received one of the best trainings as a pediatric intensivist.
Welcome to the Nemours Champions for Children podcast. I'm Carol Vassar, and this is our holiday giving back edition. The voice you just heard is that of Delaware-based Nemours pediatric intensivist, Dr. Odira Nwankwor. Now a citizen of the United States, Dr. Nwankwor hails from the West African nation of Nigeria, a multicultural country of 218.5 million people, half of whom, according to UNICEF, are under the age of 15. Over the past 5 years, infant and under five mortality rates have remained steady and alarmingly high in Nigeria. One in every eight children born in that nation does not survive to their fifth birthday. Dr. Nwankwor wants to make a dent in that devastating statistic by giving back to his home nation with his time, talent, and training. As it turns out, Dr. Nwankwor, the intensivist, quickly identified a gap in services that he could help fill to achieve the goal of affecting better health outcomes for children under five, with a bit of help from friends both in the U.S. and in Nigeria. Starting in 2016, Dr. Nwankwor gathered research to support his case for pediatric intensive care unit services, PICU services, in Nigeria, which were non-existent anywhere in the nation at that time. He rallied friends, family, colleagues, and fellow clinicians from Nemours Children's Health, Cooper University Healthcare in Camden, New Jersey, and his medical school alma mater, the University of Nigeria Teaching Hospital in Enugu. Under his leadership, this team paved the way for Nigeria's first and so far only PICU in 2019. Dr. Nwankwor joins us to talk about the origins, progress, and early results of this PICU. He's joined by a few of the people who took part in its development, each of whom has personal and or professional reasons for taking part in this massive project, including Nemours PICU float nurse, Rachel Baskin.
I have participated in medical missions in the past, and so something that I was really interested in doing again, and building a PICU is a completely different project compared to, you know, mission trips where you might be helping out in the community. This is completely different. I mean, you're bringing a whole different level of healthcare to a community that needs it but doesn't have it. And so it was really special.
Nemours anesthesiologist, Dr. Manish Purohit.
Interventional medicine is something that I've been interested in for some time. My grandfather was a physician in Africa and my mother grew up there. Both my parents are like Odira. They were educated in another country, came here, built themselves up, and now my parents are retired, but they never got a chance to go back to their home country and help the people that they had left behind in a way. And so when Odira sent out this email, it really did hit me very personally. Even though I grew up here, my mother grew up in Mombasa, Kenya, and the chance to be able to do something, especially not too far from where my mother grew up, was a big drive for me.
Nemours pediatric clinical nurse specialist, Aaron Dwyer.
So Odira approached me when he was getting the team together in 2019 and asked if I would be willing to join the mission. He tugged on my heartstrings a little bit and told me that he felt like he could use somebody with some specialized training and expertise in nursing procedures and education. I was also very interested in doing some international medical mission work, which I had not gotten to do yet. So when this opportunity came around, there was absolutely no way that I was going to miss this trip.
And Cooper Namora's pediatric surgeon, Dr. Douglas Katz.
I was excited to be able to do some teaching, but also to work with a couple of the Nigerian pediatric surgeons and do some interesting, challenging, rare cases that are more prevalent in their country that we see on a routine basis here in the States, but still be a part of the group and the enthusiasm, the passion. Yeah, the people that get together and do this, they're just good folk.
Good folk indeed. Led by Dr. Nwankwor, whose vision for this 5-bed PICU began to come to fruition well before that first team trip to Nigeria in 2019.
3 years before then, we had started collecting supplies. You know, we did that over a couple of years. We continued with our feasibility studies in Nigeria to know what it is that they need. And I started talking to people over here, started looking for support at all levels. It took us a couple of years, but I think in 2019, everything crystallized nicely well. And we made our initial trip for two reasons. One was to set up the physical structure of the ICU and then start the initial phase of training. Those two objectives were met. Then in 2020, we were supposed to go and COVID hit. And it took us a while to get the team together. And there were about 16 of us that went to Nigeria back again in March of this year, 2022, to do a couple of things. One of which was to continue the teaching, the training, but very importantly, to be involved in clinical services. And again, all those objectives were met. The team that went in 2019, we were about 10. And I'm almost sure that the team that will go next year will be about 20. So the interest is there.
Starting a PICU from the ground up is no mean feat, and there were barriers to overcome. Rachel Baskin.
There really is a difference in nursing in America and nursing in other countries. And so we had prepared education for them as though they had the same level of training, same autonomy, same supplies that we have here. And when we shadowed on the PICU and got to spend time there, we realized that a lot of their processes, their resources are vastly different from us. And so we had to kind of quickly shift and say, how can we make this still relevant to them and their practice? Because we were working in a teaching hospital, we found out that the residents actually place IVs and in G-tubes and all the things that we do here as nurses. And so we talked to them more about vital signs and continuous assessments and trying to build that critical thinking because their scope is much more limited. But that didn't mean that they were any less interested in what we had to teach them. They loved the IV station. They were running around with the fake arms at one point. I think that they were very receptive to what we had to teach. It was just as someone who thought that we were so prepared going into it, it was a bit of a challenge to regroup and say, how can we make this relevant to them and still empower them to feel like they're going to learn something that they can use in their practice?
When we conceptualized this, we looked at a model that I coined SPSS model. This is just my words, actually. And the S there means supplies. And the P is personnel. And the other S is spaced. And the last S is support. I looked at this model, and I thought that the place to start would be the supplies. If you look at the literature, published work will tell you that when you want to start a system and a service like this, that you should start with the training and finish up the training before you build the physical structure, which is true. But I happen to have a different take to this. And the reason I have this different take is that I understand the local community. I know what will make them do what you want them to do next. And I thought that if we get these supplies together and we have a physical place and they could see the physicality of the ICU, then if you tell them that we can now go ahead and do the training, they will believe you more. I knew this environment and I knew that if they could come in and see an ICU, they would believe that you can now do the training and you get the support that you needed. So having that at the back of my mind, what I set out to do was to start collecting those supplies. And we did. It took us years. It took us talking to a lot of people. At Cooper here, where I am, I had to speak to the chairman of pediatrics here, Dr. Goodman. And he actually was very instrumental to getting us the initial supplies. I came to Nemours and spoke to a whole lot of people in biomed, in SPD, respiratory care services. And then we started getting supplies. There are a lot of things that came into that supplies. Getting the supplies, finding a place to store them, getting people to come out to help you to pack them, sort them, shipping those supplies. But the moment I knew that we had enough supplies, I went back to Nigeria. I went to the hospital. I met with the hospital where I did my medical school. I discussed with them and we started looking for the physical space. And because they do not have a pediatric ICU already, we had to put a lot of things into consideration. We looked at the services they have in the hospital that is closest to critical care, so to say. And that would be the pediatric emergency department. So we got a space that is adjacent to the pediatric emergency department, because those are the people that deal with the acute critical care, so to say. So we got this space. It was an empty, dirty, rundown place. I had to get the support from them, model the place, change out the windows to make sure that dust wouldn't come in. They put an air conditioner to the place. The water supply is also not very reliable. We had to take care of all those in a whole other manners to make sure that when the ICU takes off, that those things are going to be there. And then we started looking for certain level of support, the local support we got from the hospital, the state level support. We had to get the state governor to buy into what we're coming to do, to provide us with logistics as we came in. And as we were doing this, I knew that we had the physical place, we had supplies, and the next thing that we needed to do was to begin to train personnel. By the time I had sent those supplies down there, and I knew that when we go down there and set up ICU, and they come there and see the ICU, they will believe more in our training. And that's how we started with personnel. The first team that went there, if you remember what I said earlier, we went there for two purposes. One was to set up the physical structure and to start the initial phase of training. And that's precisely what we did. Those challenges, as we met them, we tried to find a way around them.
And yet there was one challenge that no one could foresee or plan around, at least initially. The COVID-19 pandemic, which put the brakes on in-person trips to Nigeria in both 2020 and 2021. So how did they maintain excitement for the project? By pivoting with the times. Dr. Nwankwor.
When COVID hit and nobody could travel, we had to do what other people were doing. So we started using Zoom to continue our training. If there's anything good about COVID, it was that it made online platform so easy and so well accepted worldwide. Every 2 weeks, we had different topics. We had different speakers. We had people from Nemours coming to help with the training. We had people from outside Nemours. I brought in people from California, Los Angeles Children's Hospital. I have people from Yale University in Connecticut. People from St. Luke's University in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. I kind of spread it out wide. I was inviting lecturers. People could just sit in the comfort of their homes, in the comfort of their offices or in the hospital, and then deliver wonderful lectures. So what we were doing during the COVID was mainly online-based training. It might also interest you to know that even as we have gone for the trip this year and came back, we have still continued with an online training. As I speak to you now, we have a very big group training. I'm part of a group who call ourselves Pediatric Critical Care in Resource Limited Setting. It's headed by Dr. Michael Canary, who is an intensivist at Yale. And what we do, so we have the hospitals in Nigeria, we have hospitals in Port-au-Prince, Haiti, we have hospitals in Ghana, in Malawi, in Rwanda, that we deliver these lectures on a regular basis. So the Nigerian group, every 2 weeks, either they are having a formal lecture, they're doing a case presentation, they're doing an interactive session. So that online training is continuous.
Continuous for nearly 2 years before the next in-person team trip to Nigeria finally took place in March 2022. It was a mix of returnees from the 2019 trip and new people as well, a larger group who had gotten to know one another mostly via Zoom, meeting in real life for the first time at the airport on the day of their departure for Nigeria. Dr. Manish Purohit describes the scene.
So we got to the airport in D.C. and I'm finally meeting everybody for the first time. literally for the first time. I've never met these people before in my life. And I'm sitting next to Aaron for the entire flight. Again, I've never met Aaron. We've just seen each other's names on emails. And I don't know why. We just bonded. Everybody just bonded so fast. We hadn't even gotten to Nigeria yet. And in that 43 hours of flying, we became a family and got to the airport. And next thing you know, we're sitting in the hotel and eating off of each other's plates for that dinner. It still boggles my mind. I'm still so proud that I was able to be a part of that. The entire culture shock was really mitigated by the fact that we were all together.
Dr. Douglas Katz.
I have to agree with everything that he said, especially about the sharing the food. The first group that I went with in 19 was a great group. There were four of us that had returned for the second trip. And it was a different group of people for the most part, but it was the same type of intensity of being together. It was exciting. A lot of people had never done type of traveling before, but everybody worked as a team. When you can sit and sweat with people as much as we did and still hug each other, it's a good sign. But everybody was looking forward to doing something good. And this trip had good and bad. It was tough because when we started doing the clinical work, it's like anything at the beginning, it's not perfectly smooth. But I was able to see people that had come back. Most of us were able to see that there were changes. And while things weren't perfect, they were still in the right direction. And for me, it was really exciting to see the same passion and enthusiasm for the Nigerian physicians and healthcare workers and all the people who helped put together the whole process on the Nigerian side, not just, you know, Odira and his Herculean efforts here in the States.
Just to add on to what Manish and Doug both said, there was this element of being trapped on a plane together for 23 hours where, you know, Manish graciously took a middle seat so I didn't have to. And we found ourselves just kind of sitting and chatting and getting to know each other's backgrounds, even though we work in the same hospital. We were amazed that Manish and I had not crossed paths before. And I think it was really nice throughout those long hours in the air that we all would take turns and, you know, get up and walk our laps around the plane and visit each other in our seats and go spend a couple minutes chatting with Doug, spend a couple minutes talking to Rachel. Like I said, Manish and I sat next to each other. So by the time we landed and had some layover flights, it was like, okay, we're a family. We have to look out for each other. We are in an airport on another continent at this point. So, okay, I'm going to watch the bags. You guys go to the bathroom in a group. And if we just fell into these roles very naturally. I think when we arrived in Nigeria, we all kind of fell into these roles that worked really well for us. So, you know, I acknowledge that I am a bit of a perfectionist and I needed to kind of check that at the door. And I quickly learned that Doug was going to be the person who was going to help bring me down from that. Doug had experienced this and he just had this really great way of saying, hey, you're doing a good job. We don't have to be perfect. This is all progress. And let's look at the good that we did today. So I kind of figured out every person on the team played a different role, and I knew who I needed to go to for different types of support pretty early on.
Once at their final destination, the teams from both the U.S. and Nigeria quickly found themselves bonding and learning from one another. Rachel Baskin.
So when we first arrived, we did tours the first day. We met the doctors and the medical team that we would be working with throughout the trip. And then I kind of laughed because you have your preconceived notions about going to a low resource country and how their medical care is going to be. But we were not allowed to set foot in that NICU for purposes of cleanliness. And we had to put on special shoes and gowns and gloves and masks to go into the PICU. They treated it like a completely sterile environment. We did rounds with the medical team so we could learn from them what they were doing, what kind of medical management they were doing. And then they invited us to give them feedback or advice, something that I thought was cool, I guess you could say. I'm not sure if that's the right adjective, but the two residents were trying to catheterize a very small female baby. And anyone in the healthcare field knows that it's not the easiest thing to do, especially if you're just doing it by yourself. So I said, would you like me to hold the legs in a frog leg position so you have better visibility of the urethra? And the doctor said yes, and she really appreciated it. And so I feel like we let them do their work, but we also wanted to be involved, but not overstep. This wasn't our picking. We were guests in their space. And as hard as it was, I think, as ICU nurses and how detail-oriented we are, it's hard to not want to take over care. But in the end, it wouldn't have taught them anything if we swooped in and did everything for them. And so really working on that collaboration piece, them asking for our opinions and us teaching them things about medical care and how we do certain things in the States was really special.
If you remember what I said about the model we employed to make sure that this works, and I call that model SPSS, the last S is support. Some of these things would happen at the background. On one of my trips before they took the team down, I had gone to meet with the governor of the state. I met him for this trip. It was the second time. And what I wanted him to do was for him to buy into what we're coming to do. And by that, I asked him to do a couple of things. Because I realized that if I'm bringing a team from America, people who haven't been to Africa before, we're not paying them any penny, no sense to come and do this. The least you want them to do when they come is to stress them out. So we made sure that we had decent accommodation. We made sure that we had local transportation. We made sure that we have security. We made sure that we had food. The other thing that we did prior to going to Nigeria was to find a way to let the two teams communicate and meet before we came down to Nigeria. One of the ways we did that was the surgical group from there and the surgical team from Nigeria met over a period of like 3 weeks on Zoom so that there will be that interaction, those teams, even before we got to Nigeria. I also asked the local administration at the hospital to do a quick get together. The early nights that we came in, I think it was the second night that we came in, brought most people that were involved in the clinical care, and we brought our team, and they took us out on a social interaction, and we went out there, we had food, we had music, we had dance, and people met in a very cordial, informal way. Those things helped. Then the other thing that we're doing for ourselves is it's very, very hard to do clinical care, and even worse, in low-resource settings. So one of the things that also helped us to bond together were some informal activities that were done amongst ourselves when we retired in the evenings.
We never felt like outsiders. We were always treated like we were part of their family in Nigeria, and we were well-fed. And as everyone likes to laugh, because I'm a vegan, so my dietary restrictions were very foreign and strange to the woman who was in charge of our meals. And she very fondly asked, "What do you eat?" But I was always fed. We were always hydrated and we had shelter and we felt safe. And there was never a point where we were uncomfortable. It was an incredible opportunity. And I am so grateful for how we were treated there because everyone had such a heart of gold.
So what have been the results of the work? The continuous training, the collection and distribution of resources, and the two trips made by Nemours Cooper clinicians to physically build this PICU? An average daily census of 2 to 3 patients in a 5-bed PICU, and more than a few patient stories demonstrating the importance of this PICU to the community it serves. Dr. Nwankwor.
I was in Nigeria for 3 weeks. And our team, we all left at different times. There were teams that left after 1 week, another team after 2 weeks. So I stayed there the longest. In the last week that I was there, we had a 2-year-old who came in February unconscious. The suspicion then was meningitis. And one of the good things that we were doing then was actually doing a multidisciplinary round. And I think some of us that were in the round will see how excited the team there was with those rounds, how much they enjoyed it, and we're trying to change the way that they do their rounds, you know, to make it multidisciplinary. And in one of the rounds, we talked about this kid. Based on clinical history, clinical exams, I thought that this kid probably has a meningoencephalitis. And I had recommended to them to add a cyclovir in addition to the antimicrobials that they had the kid on. And this kid was unconscious for days. Other than that, we were rounding. And just the day that I left, we flew Ethiopian Airlines. and we had a layover. As I was disembarking from the aircraft, a text message came to my phone, and it was a video message showing the kid opening her eyes. Yes, they showed me the kid opening her eyes, moving. And it was a very big gift. You know, it was a real nice parting gift for me. I sent it to the group right away. And they kept updating me on a daily basis. And at some point, they showed the kid sitting down on the bed, conversing appropriately, and the kid recovered fully and was discharged from the ICU to their pediatric floor. So that was really exciting to me.
While not all patient stories result in the desired outcome, there are positives that come about from the legacy provided by all children treated at this faraway PICU. Erin Dwyer recalls one particular patient.
So when we arrived in Nigeria, the first day that we rounded with the team in the PICU, there was a patient in their care who had been with them for about a month, I believe, at that point, and had spent time in another hospital prior to arriving in the PICU. And he had a tracheostomy, which is really, really rare for a child in the country of Nigeria to be offered a tracheostomy. And we pretty quickly realized that there was a level of discomfort with how to care for him because this was not a common clinical scenario. Whereas we all had pretty extensive experience in caring for children with trachs in our clinical setting here. To Rachel's point, we didn't want to just jump in and take over the care and say, we need to do these 10 things. We were able to ask the right questions to figure out what resources were available to care for this child. And then we did realize that there were some supplies that we brought with us that this child would benefit from. And we had a particular different type of trach that he might benefit from having a trach with a cuff. So we came in the next day and rounded with the team again, made the plan with the team that we would like to change the trach if they were open to that. They were able to get the ENT surgeon to the bedside. And he was actually really excited to work with us on this. We brought a simulation doll with us and allowed everybody to practice taking a trach out and putting a new trach in. And then when it came time to change it, we had our two respiratory therapists who were with us, Rusty and Kimmy, and they both stepped away and said, we're not going to do this. We've just trained you in how to do this. We're going to be here to support you. We'll stand right next to you, but you're going to do this. And two members of the Nigerian team got really excited and said, we're going to do this. And we supported them through that. The child tolerated it really well. They were so proud of themselves. And it was a really nice moment because we were kind of still in the early days of our trip, but we felt like we had accomplished part of what we went there to do, which was to allow them to see that there's so many different resources that can be available. You don't have to have all the biggest and best technology, but just by practicing and making a plan and going through those motions several times that they had the confidence to be able to do that procedure on that child. I think it's important to note that the child who I just talked about with the tracheostomy, he had a pretty devastating diagnosis. And when his mom saw our team arrive, I think it gave her a lot of hope that we were going to be able to cure him. And we realized that even if this child had been in our care, in our hospital in America, his outcome probably would have been poor. And he did, unfortunately, start to deteriorate over the few days that we got to know him. So I think one of the things that we were able to really help that team with was that we had Dr. Mindy Dickerman with us, who is one of our pediatric intensivists and is also certified and specializes in palliative care. So she was able to help the medical team in the PICU think about what end-of-life care could look like for this child and talk about the therapies that we could offer him and whether they would be life enhancing versus life prolonging. And while we were there, the child did end up passing away. His mom was there with him when he died. But I think one of the amazing gifts that we gave to her before he died is that we also had an occupational therapist with us And she was able to help get all of his medical equipment to a spot where we could mobilize him. And we got him out of bed and we had his mom hold him before the end of his life. And his mom had not held him since he had been in the hospital. So that was a really, really special moment. There was not a dry eye in the room. And a really special moment for us to experience with her. And then about 2 days later, he passed away. So getting to see that even though we couldn't save every child, we were able to give them some resources that we all have from some of our difficult cases. I think it was tough to handle, but I know that I felt really good about what we were able to do in those moments.
Erin Dwyer is a pediatric clinical nurse specialist, serving as a harm prevention manager for Nemours Children's Health in Delaware. She was joined in conversation by Cooper Nemours pediatric surgeon Dr. Douglas Katz, Nemours anesthesiologist Dr. Manish Purohit, Nemours PICU float nurse Rachel Baskin, and the man who leads the PICU Nigeria program, Nemours intensivist Dr. Odira Nwankwor. The Nemours Champions for Children podcast is often featuring stories like this about associates going well beyond medicine by giving back locally, nationally, and even internationally. Your story ideas for 2023 are now being accepted. Let's hear from you at podcast@nemours.org. That's podcast@nemours.org. And thanks. With gratitude and kudos, let's acknowledge this week's production team. Cheryl Munn, Che Parker, Rachel Salas-Silverman, and editor Savannah Pettit. Spread the news amongst colleagues, family, friends, and all you know that the Champions for Children podcast is found on NemoursNet, the Nemours Now app, your favorite podcast app, and by simply telling your smart speaker to play it. Our music is courtesy of Blue Dot Sessions in Turner's Falls, Massachusetts. On behalf of Rachel Baskin, Erin Dwyer, and Drs. Odira Nwankwor, Douglas Katz, and Manish Purohit, I'm Carol Vassar. Thanks for joining us on this edition of the Champions for Children podcast. Until next time, please stay safe, stay well, and thank you for all you do for the children and families we serve. And please have a happy and safe holiday season and a healthy new year.